You're listening to number 10 of The Green Elephant in the Room.
Welcome to The Green Elephant in the Room, conversations about the climate and environment. Now here is your host, Rico.
This is your host, Rico, at The Green Elephant in the Room. We are coming to you from beautiful Guadalajara, Mexico, where with every episode, we address issues concerning the environment and climate change and give you timely tips, insights, and inspiration for all of us to live a cleaner, affordable, and more fulfilling lives while easing the burden we are putting on the Earth's living ecosystems. It's been said before, but it's worth repeating, denial is not a river in Egypt. This episode is not about your garden variety denial of climate science. It is about the denial of our place in the universe. We humans are wonderfully accomplished at pushing uncomfortable truths to the recesses of our minds. If we are honest with ourselves, we all have to own up to being at least part-time deniers. I know I am. What would it take for us to face our denial head-on? Can someone living a privileged life like most of us in the West be without denial? We are living in a divided state of mind where we live as if something is true, but we know it's not. I strongly believe that there are a significant number of people who are tired of the shallow chatter that fills so much of our popular culture these days. They have realized that there's not much that can be said in short, snappy tweets that can deal with the bleak future that we've made for ourselves. They are tired of the grand national delusion. As a supremely intelligent species, we pride ourselves in our abilities to self-reflect, reason, and make moral judgments. But since the first Earth Day in 1970, we have taken a 50-year vacation from reality. We need to realize and remember that nature is resilient, can rebound, and can quickly get back to a healthier state if we give it a chance to do so. We need storylines that tell us that we can collaborate with nature, that we can, as Pope Francis has urged, be stewards and partners of the natural world rather than dominators of it. We need to imagine a new kind of happiness not based on material consumption. Even though climate change and environmental issues involve chemistry and physics, our greatest challenge is political. America's concerns about environmental matters are divided along political lines. I think it would be instructive to talk a little about the science and more about the scientists themselves. The vast majority of scientists, 97%, are concerned about the pending environmental threats. And that's not just 97% of scientists agreeing. When you publish a scientific paper, your findings are peer-reviewed by other scientists in your field for accuracy. That means that 97% of the tens of thousands of peer-reviewed scientific investigations find that global warming is real and largely caused by humans. A natural question would be, who are the other 3% of scientists that are doubters? What's the deal with them? These are the climate scientists who argue that something other than humans are responsible for the changing climate, although their explanations are often contradictory and don't withstand scientific scrutiny and peer review. Unfortunately, all this confusion is working. A new report shows that the vast majority of Americans have no clue what the scientific consensus on climate change is. They think there's still an open debate. This is a central point. Almost 90% of Americans don't know there's scientific agreement that we are cooking the planet. And that is not good. On my website, I have a link to a database of almost 200 long discredited climate myths that is remarkable to see. Let's approach this with our eyes open. Virtually all of these scientists are honest, hardworking men and women who have dedicated their lives to their field of study. They have spent years and a bucket of money to obtain their degrees and are the best and brightest this country has ever produced. Climatologists, like other scientists, tend to be an impassive group. They are not given to theatrical drama about falling skies. Most of them are far more comfortable in their laboratories or gathering data in the field than they are giving interviews to journalists or speaking before congressional committees. They have often been criticized for not giving the public clear and compelling information about the dangers of our environmental crisis. My question has always been, why is it their job to communicate these dangers to society? They have consistently conveyed the results of their findings to the public. We have simply chosen to ignore it. Why then are climatologists speaking out about the dangers of climate change? The answer is that virtually all of them are now convinced that the global warming and damage to our living ecosystems poses a clear and present danger to civilization. Twenty-seven years ago, the Union of Concerned Scientists and more than 1,700 independent scientists, including the majority of living Nobel laureates in the sciences, wrote what was called the World Scientists' Warning to Humanity. They published this document in full-page editorials in newspapers all over the world. I remember when I saw this, I thought, wow, finally, now people will pay attention to this growing issue. It was generally ignored. That was 1992. 25 years later, in 2017, similar dire predictions led more than 15,000 scientists from around the world to sign a second notice. This open letter warned that quick and drastic actions should be undertaken by society to address the threat of climate change. I have put both of these documents on my website for your viewing pleasure. So, as a culture, many of us have chosen to ignore what the experts are telling us. Remember, as we discussed in Episode 9, it is not just climate change. It is the reckless destruction of the Earth's wilderness, the forest, the oceans, the ice caps, and the wetlands that is leading to the tremendous loss of wild plant and animals on a scale that is astonishing. If you really stop and think about it, you can see it with your own eyes. It's all around you. And more importantly, unlike climate change, it's hard to deny. Most of us are not climate deniers. It is unreasonable and, frankly, a stupid position to take. But I would say most of us are everyday deniers in the way we live our lives. Daily deniers, or as I like to say, lukewarmers. We display everyday denial in the choices we make in transportation, our food options, or our consumption patterns. These are choices every one of us make multiple times a day. And unless you are making the right choices, you are denying our climate and environmental problems by your daily actions. Are you still driving around in a gigantic SUV because little cars are unsafe? Are you eating a healthy diet of fruit and vegetables, but throwing away the cores and peels in the trash? Are you filling up the tea kettle with 6 cups of water for a single cup of tea? times hundreds of millions of people engaged in hundreds of billions of actions, and you can guess, it adds up. The greatest single problem facing us is apathy. A dictionary definition of apathy is lack of interest, lack of enthusiasm, or concern. The opposite of apathy is empathy. Some synonyms for empathy would be sympathy, sensitivity, or awareness. There's a key concept, lack of awareness. For many of us, it is beyond our consciousness that many of our collective, everyday actions generate enormous planetary impacts. A new report finds that nearly 2 in 3 Chinese people self-identify as environmentalist, more than double America's level. The cost of all the rapid growth they have experienced are clearer there. Daily smoggy skies and polluted water are more immediately threatening than longer summers or a few degrees increase in average temperatures. Back in the 1970s, America had noticeably dirty air and water. In Los Angeles, most days, you could not see the nearby mountains because of thick pollution. People used to dump so much waste into our waterways that rivers actually burned. Isn't water supposed to put out fires? Don't we drink it? Because of that, we've made great efforts to clean up our air and water, and it has paid off. Unfortunately, the reason we don't have it now is because much of that pollution has been exported. All of the factories that make all of our stuff are now polluting countries like India, China, and other developing nations. Why do these threats produce apathy and not action? With so much at stake, why do people fail to act? What is happening inside their brains? Neuroscience helps explain why. Our uniqueness as human beings among the world's species is undeniable. Arguably, our brains are the most fantastic creation in the universe. We have billions of brain cells that create trillions of connections. It boggles, well, the brain. Here is this 3-pound massive jelly that you can hold in the palm of your hand. It can contemplate the meaning of infinity, and it can contemplate itself contemplating the meaning of infinity. We will never fully comprehend our own brains. They are too complex. However, with MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging, we can see exactly how the brain makes choices. We're beginning to understand just why people behave so irrationally. Part of the reason, according to studies, is that for the human brain, climate change simply does not compute. For one thing, human brains aren't wired to respond easily to large, slow-moving threats. Our brain was created for a linear world where we needed to act quickly to all threats. It's not like this anymore. We are not living in the woods among stronger predators, and we are regularly subjected to stimuli from the outside world, which is larger than ever. We cannot react the same way to all these provocations, but we naturally do. The problem is that our world is not local anymore. It's global. Our first reaction to the bad news about climate change and sustainability problems are denial and fear. Not empathy. Our brains automatically react in the wrong way because they are not programmed for a global world where we need to feel empathy to take action for problems that might not be involving us directly, but also other humans. Think of it this way. Our brain is essentially a get-out-of-the-way machine. That's why we can duck a baseball in milliseconds. While we have come to dominate the planet because of such traits, threats that develop over decades rather than seconds bypass the brain's alarm system. Many environmentalists say climate change is happening too fast. The sad fact is that it's happening too slowly. It's not happening nearly quickly enough to get our attention. And so it's up to us to use our ability to reason, to rise above our natural instincts, to pay attention, and to act. The sobering fact is that climate and environmental risks aren't leaving anytime soon. The science has spoken, and time is not on our side.
Every evening when the sun goes down, get with my party and I begin to clown. I don't care what the people are thinking. I'm not drunk, I'm just a drinking. I set 'em up, another round. I'll set 'em up, another round. I'll set 'em up, another round. One more round won't get me down.
There is a group of professional old white millionaire men and a few women. They're the most influential group in the world at obstructing any measure or laws that would protect the Earth from substantial disruption to our atmosphere, lands, and oceans. They accept hundreds of millions of dollars from corporate interest, so many of the most powerful companies in the world will not have to change their business model. The intensive effort to discredit the scientific consensus over man-made climate change has been continuing for over two decades by this organization that is located in the United States, and it shows no signs of weakening. This assembly is called the United States Congress. One wing of the Congress, the Republicans, are the world's greatest threat to life on Earth. In recent years, even though leaders of the Republican Party have become aware that denying the existence of global warming makes them look like fools, they insist on putting the planet in peril. The Congress is not broken. The Republican Party is broken. We are the only country with a major conservative party that has attached itself to the madness of denying the overwhelming evidence of climate science. These Republican climate deniers often rest their case on the defense of the American way of life, defined by high consumption and ever-expanding material prosperity. In their mind, the American way of life is clearly defined as the unlimited and ever-expanding ability of all American citizens to indulge in unrestricted material consumption. Their position is often based on the assumption that economic growth must always come first and that protecting the environment can only be secondary to growth. The attack has turned from whether the climate is changing to why do environmentalists hate capitalism? They claim the Greens are the enemies of economic freedom and want to destroy the economy. The idea of small government and free markets is almost like a secular religion. This hasn't always been the case. The GOP wasn't always an anti-environmental, anti-science party. 30 years ago, global warming became front-page news, and both the Republicans and Democrats took it seriously. Both parties worked together in the 1960s and 1970s to pass sweeping environmental legislation. Between the first Earth Day and 1980, Congress passed 28 major environmental laws, proof to the depth of public interest in the issue. The laws required improvements to air and water quality, acted to rescue endangered species and their habitat, abolished the use of lead in gasoline, restricted pesticides, created the Superfund to clean up severely polluted chemical waste dumps, and set aside more land for national parks, forest, wilderness areas, and wildlife refuge. So why the dramatic shift in thinking? The truth is that most prominent climate deniers are basically paid to take that position, receiving large amounts of money from fossil fuel companies. Paradoxically, most Republicans still do not regard climate change as a hoax. But in Republican circles, speaking out on the issue, let alone pushing climate policy, is politically dangerous. It has become yet another of the long list of litmus test issues that determine whether or not you're a good Republican. All of this is dangerous for a couple of reasons. These are our elected representatives who make our laws and public policies. We are the only country in the world where one political party is denying overwhelming scientific evidence for money and ideological purity. That is bad enough. However, climate denialism is largely, but not exclusively, a U.S. phenomenon. There is a global rightward shift on climate change. Because of our bad example, other countries are being encouraged to scale back their environmental policies. Many of the right-wing nationalist parties in Europe now have climate change denial as one of their most important issues. Probably the most frightening is Brazil's new hard-right president, Bolsonaro. Hours after taking office, he launched an assault on environmental and Amazon protections. His economic policy is to harvest the rainforest's riches and turn them into commodities for export. Look, we all care about the environment. Everyone loves elephants and tigers and flowers and blue skies and green grass and clean air. No one likes cancer or landfills or plastic islands. Everybody wants a beautiful backyard and parks and efficient cars and dishwashers and clothes made by human beings, not slaves or children. So, we all care. But many of us don't care enough to read up on the immense impacts we are inflicting on our ecosystems, or elephants dying, or the cancers that are caused by the pesticides on our bright green lawns. Or we don't have time to cook with real food, or bicycle, or walk. In other words, we all care, but we don't care enough. This is a global issue, and it's going to take global solutions. That means we need the majority of the world's citizens, corporations, and governments on board. We need leadership, and that is only going to come from electing politicians who are focused on these issues. Recent polling showed that the consensus on environmental issues has reached its highest point ever in the United States. Almost 3 out of 4 people, 73%, say they are seriously concerned about the human impact on the living world. With numbers like that, it would be easy to vote in caring representatives. But there is a problem. We don't care enough about environmental issues. Why aren't Americans worried about these issues? Reason number one is lots of reasons. Here's the results of a poll showing what are the top concerns for voters. Number one, the economy. Then things like reducing budget deficits, defending against terrorism, improving education, reducing health care costs, illegal immigration, reducing crimes. In this poll, the environmental concerns barely made the top 20. So even though the majority of Americans have a high level of concern for the environment, when it comes time to vote, other matters push that concern to the bottom of the list. We Americans like to say we're eco-friendly, but the evidence points to the contrary. Calling yourself an environmentally conscious person doesn't actually make you one. And aside from the simple tasks like turning off lights, Americans overwhelmingly ignore the environmental impacts of their day-to-day actions. Only 1 in 4 say that they actually consider the environment in their daily actions. Another sad truth is that financial considerations are a real barrier to being environmentally responsible. Get a load of this. You're going to find these numbers kind of astonishing. People were asked how much they were willing to pay monthly to fight climate change. Ask yourself, how much would you be willing to pay? $5 a month? $50? 57% of those surveyed said they'd be willing to pay at least $1 a month. 23% said they'd pay at least $40 a month. And 16% were willing to pay at least $100 a month. Let's think about this for a moment. 57% said $1 a month. That fundamentally means that about 6 out of 10 respondents would not be willing to pay anything to deal with climate change. So, even as the world burns, action and commitment fall far behind. Let's face it, people feel paralyzed when they feel like they can't make an impact on a situation and win. Having an impact on this situation right now isn't as simple as recycling or using fewer fossil fuels. It means becoming politically active, building stronger communities, and making a shift in consciousness by looking at the world differently. We need to be clear that this is a cultural phenomenon. In countries like Thailand and the Philippines or in Latin America and in countries in Southern Europe, the concern about climate and environmental change is very high. So this everyday denial is an issue that particularly pertains to people in the wealthy democracies. But here in North America and Western Europe, we can always go to a store and buy stuff produced elsewhere because we have the money to distance ourselves from the immediate impact of weather and habitat disruptions. Unlike Native Americans, European settlers did not have the mindset of taking care of the land around them. They considered all land that could be not used for planting food as useless. Once they came to America, they came across an abundance of open land that could, as they thought, be used for whatever they desired. This also gave them the idea that the land was pretty much infinite and inexhaustible. Unintentionally, this has set the standard for the world that we live in today. We need new kinds of narratives that tell us that the natural world is resilient and can rebound and get back into a healthier state if we give it a chance. We need stories that tell us that we can collaborate with nature, that we can be stewards and partners of the natural world rather than dominators of it. We need accounts about a new kind of happiness not based on material consumption. The considerable changes that we are experiencing in our ecosystems and the biosphere is an opportunity for a new kind of economic development. For example, our entire energy system could be redesigned from the wastefulness of the previous century to a much smarter and efficient method of doing things. It's a great opportunity to improve global collaboration and knowledge sharing and to create a more just society. So our environmental impacts are just a fantastic opportunity to encourage our global humanity to emerge. We need to be talking about this. With an election coming up in less than 2 years, it raises the awareness that it's not strong leaders or parties that dominate politics as much as powerful political narratives. A great example is the recent congressional proposal of a new Green Deal. This new Green Deal includes several proposed economic stimulus programs that aim to address both economic jobs and climate change. This is the sort of bold and innovative thinking that we need to engage in and support if we are going to have any hope of tackling the formative issue facing our civilization. And this is just a proposal. It may or may not pass. But the fact is, Washington is talking about climate change for the first time in years. To solve these problems, it demands the sort of measures that require a fundamental shift in how capitalism, as we know it, operates. We need to turn away from the system we have now, of where a few people accumulate wealth for themselves, to one that serves individuals and groups and communities. This may sound harsh, but we are headed for a crash sooner or later. Wouldn't it be better to make this transition on our own terms rather than in crisis mode? Why not use this to our advantage by planning to reduce both mindless consumerism and carbon emissions while increasing equity and quality of life? This is a wake-up call on the urgency of taking action. At stake is the prosperity and survival of generations to come, and there is no time to lose. So if politicians aren't paying attention, it's up to citizens to make their voices heard louder than ever. This radical transformation I am talking about is not a backward step, but a new pathway to a different kind of prosperity involving fundamental changes in how we live our lives. This will need to include a radical shift in how we make and consume energy by a rapid move from fossil fuels to renewables. This means fundamental changes in our lifestyles to lower CO2 emissions and bring an end to unrestrained habitat destruction. This is a radical transformation, and I know it's scary, and people don't want to hear it and will turn away. So be it. Some say we have been too optimistic about finding solutions. Optimism has its place. In fact, we are going to have to be relentlessly optimistic in order to achieve the lofty goals needed to reduce the worst of the environmental challenges facing us. But many feel that we are naively optimistic about those challenges, and it's time to take a realistic view and an accurate assessment of the whole enchilada. Yes, we need hope. Hope is another word for what might be possible, not promised, not guaranteed. Hope calls for action, and action is impossible without hope.
Thanks for listening to The Green Elephant. Visit us on our website, bit.ly/greenelephantintheroom. That's bit.ly/greenelephantintheroom, where you can find valuable information and links to everything that was addressed on today's show and more.
On the next episode of The Green Elephant in the Room, we're changing up the format a little bit. Call it The Elephant Unleashed. We will continue to include practical and useful lifestyle information to help you make a personal commitment to restore balance to the environment. We are entering a golden age of opportunity for reshaping and restructuring our societies and imagining what a low-carbon and restored planet might look like. We'll see you next episode.